In the sermon that we commonly call the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, in the first chapter, especially the last half, talks about His citizens, His disciples, must have a righteousness that exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. And He gave several examples of ways in which that must happen. He talked about murder. He talked about adultery. He talked about hatred. He talked about divorce. He talked about swearing. He talked about vengeance. He talked about love. All of these, of course, were things that were visible, things that people could see, outward acts. Well, now in Matthew chapter 6, of course, it's all the same sermon. In Matthew chapter 6, he goes into maybe some further detail about how this righteousness is supposed to be greater than that of the scribes and Pharisees. And in particular, he looks at the attitude, the manner in which that righteousness is to express itself. And he mentions again and gives us several examples of ways in which that is to be seen in a disciple's life. In Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, he talks about doing charitable deeds. Doing charitable deeds in the first four verses. He says, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory for men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly." You notice this is much about motivation. It's not so much about whether you should do charitable deeds or not, because it's assumed from this that that His disciples, His people, will do charitable deeds. So there's no need for Him to say, do charitable deeds, because He already assumes that you're going to do them. So what He does here is not command the doing, the action. What He does here is He says, examine why you're doing charitable deeds. Why are you doing them? So again, it kind of goes back to the attitude that people can or should have. Because, you know, there's a lot of atheists that do religious acts. There's a lot of atheists that give money, that set up institutions or that do these type of things that are charitable deeds, that's considered a religious act, but they're atheists. So He wants to make sure that people don't just do a religious act without having the right motivation, the right purpose, the right reason behind doing them. There is caution given. He says, take heed, or be cautious. Might have another translation there. Be cautious that the reason you're doing them is not to be seen by people. Because that's what the scribes and Pharisees did. They wanted to be seen doing charitable deeds. Remember, He said, your righteousness has to be greater than theirs. Well, see, their motivation for much of what they did religiously was for people to see them and praise them for it. He says, my people, my disciples, citizens of my kingdom, are not to do good deeds, charitable deeds, just to get men's approval. Because He says, if that's why you do them, that's the only approval you'll get, is men's approval, because God won't give you any approval. So it comes down to, which do you want? Which do you want more, men's approval or God's approval? Pharisees wanted men's approval more. He said, my people are to look for God's approval. Everything they're to do should center around seeking, looking for God's approval. In Romans chapter 14, verse 8, Paul puts it in a little different way, but certainly the idea is the same. He says, "For if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's." Everything is supposed to revolve around the Lord, not men. So we're never to seek men's approval. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning in verse 3 and following down to verse 5. Paul writes, "But with me it's a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by a human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself." See, he's not even going after judgment or approval of himself. "For I know of nothing against myself, yet I'm not justified by this, but he who judges me is the Lord. Therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the hearts. Then each one's praise will come from God." Jesus knows the reasons we do everything. That's what Paul is saying there. He knows the reasons, the motivation behind everything we do. Every charitable deed, every religious act, every act of service. He knows if we're like the Pharisees, we're wanting people to see us do those things, or if we're really doing them for the right reasons. We can fool people, but we can't fool God. He knows exactly why we're doing what we're doing. And if we're doing them for man's approval, then Jesus says that's the only reward you'll get is man's approval. And that's why Paul often went to great lengths to not get man's approval. In other words, he didn't seek man's approval. He wanted to make sure that everything he did was what God wanted him to do. So Jesus says, when you do a charitable deed, don't sound a trumpet. You know, we today get the... when someone is telling how great he is, we talk about him, blowing his own horn or blowing his own trumpet. Well, that's the idea here. You know, look at all the good I did. I did this, I did that, I helped that person. You know, they're blowing their own horn. The only reward they're getting is the reward from men. Because God knows why they're doing that. And certainly he's not condemning us appreciating what other people do. That's not what he's talking about at all. He's talking about our own motivation for what we do religiously. Why are we doing it? Our attitude and purpose and motivation. What is it? We want to make sure we're not blowing our own horn. You know, doing charitable deeds was real common in the first century. Acts chapter 9, remember Dorcas did charitable deeds. The next chapter, Acts chapter 10, Cornelius did charitable deeds. So it was common to do charitable deeds. That was part of the law of Moses, was doing charitable deeds. So certainly that was brought over into the New Testament. We're to do charitable deeds, but we have to make sure we do them with the right attitude, for the right reason. So Jesus is kind of correcting what many of the Pharisees were doing. He wanted his disciples to make sure they didn't act like the Pharisees. I think he wants us to be very careful about our own good works. You know, back in prior to this, he had talked in other places about making sure when we let our light shine that we do it so that God is glorified and not us. That's kind of the same thing he's saying here. When we do good deeds, we want to make sure we're not doing them so that we'll be glorified, but rather that God is glorified. And sometimes we may have to go quite far to make sure that happens, that we're not blowing our own horn, but that we're doing it so that God is glorified. The church is glorified. That's what's important. Not that people, think that we're really amazing Christians. That's obviously something far, far from what we're to do. But we are to do charitable deeds. Again, he assumes his people will be doing them. He's giving guidelines so that they'll do them properly. So that giving is assumed. In Luke chapter 14, we have this, these words. Luke chapter 14, beginning in verse 12. This is about humbling yourself, having the right attitude when you help other people. Luke chapter 14, beginning in verse 12, this is Jesus talking. Says, when you give a dinner or a supper, do not ask your friends, your brothers, your relatives, nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. Now, of course, Jesus often taught like this. He's not saying that you can never have your friends or neighbors over. He is trying to teach this. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed because they cannot repay you. For you shall be repaid at the resurrection of the just. See, those people can't repay you, so therefore you can't possibly be giving the supper so that they'll repay you in kind. That's the point he's trying to make. Again, it's about motivation. It's about purpose. It's about why you're doing it. He says, if you do that, you'll be repaid at the resurrection of the just. That resurrection Jesus talks about in John 5, right? The resurrection of the just. So he says, be careful. He says, even do it so that your left hand doesn't know that your right hand is doing it. That's just a kind of a figure of speech, right? My left hand and my right hand is not capable of knowing. They don't have a brain. They can't know. But do it in such a way so that you're in no way trumpeting your own charitable deeds, your own good deeds. This would mean make sure we don't wait until somebody's watching us do something good. Like you're ready to give someone something good, but you're waiting until somebody sees you do it. That's what he's wanting you. Make sure you don't do it for that reason. Make sure you don't wait for somebody to see you before you do it. That's what the Pharisees were doing. They wanted people to see them doing good, doing charitable deeds or the alms giving. So Christians are supposed to do things for the right reason, with the right attitude, the right motivation. He talks about another religious act, another act that is assumed to be done by his disciples, not commanded to be done, but he instructs them as to, the motivation behind doing it, and that is fasting. Down in verse 16 of Matthew chapter 6, he says this, moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Now he turns to fasting. And so he gives guidelines or instructions so that when his disciples fast, they will do it in a way where they are not seeking approval of men. Because he says, don't be like the hypocrites. Don't be like the mask wearers. Remember, that's basically what the word meant in the first century. Those who wore masks. If you were in a play and you were pretending to be someone else, you would wear a mask. And so that concept came to be applied to people who pretended to be something they weren't in real life. Hypocrites. Like the scribes and Pharisees. Many of them pretended to be religious. They put on their mask of religion, their mask of spirituality, so that people would think they were religious, but inwardly they weren't, because they were doing all those things for the wrong reasons. So he says, when you fast, don't put on a sad countenance. What would the hypocrites do? They would make themselves look horrible. I mean, they wouldn't they wouldn't, very common in the first century for people to use, men especially, to use olive oil on their face to keep down infections, to, you know, help their, that was a very dry environment, of course. And so they wouldn't use oil for days to make themselves look worse when they were fasting, because they wanted people to know they were fasting. So they tried to make themselves look awful. The worst they could look, so people would see them, oh, look, man, they are really fasting. Look how religious they are. Look how spiritual they are because of how they look. See, Jesus says, don't do that. Make yourself look like normal. Don't go and try and make yourself look like you're fasting. Jesus says, that's the wrong reason. That's the wrong motivation. It's like they were wearing masks. So there were right reasons for fasting and wrong reasons for fasting. This is kind of a lengthy reading, but I think it's worthwhile. God's people back during Isaiah's time were fasting for the wrong reason. Isaiah 58, beginning in verse 3. Isaiah 58, beginning in verse 3. This is kind of sort of written in its conversation between God and the people. The people are saying in verse 3, why have we fasted, they say, and you've not seen? Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? Here's some responses. In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit all your laborers. Indeed, you fast. Notice they're fasting for the wrong reasons, for strife and debate, and to strike with the fist of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. See how they were not fasting for the right reason? Didn't have the right attitude, wrong motivation? Is it a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush and to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast? And an acceptable day to the Lord? Now he starts talking about what a fast is really supposed to be like. Is this not the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? See, this is what they were supposed to be doing, but they weren't. When you see the naked, that you should cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh. Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall bring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, here I am. See, they were fasting for all the wrong reasons. So God comes back through Isaiah and say, this is how you're supposed to fast, and this is why you're supposed to fast. These are things you're supposed to do while you fast. It was all about the motivation for fasting. Now, they were fasting. It wasn't that they weren't fasting, but they had all the wrong motivations. It's like they were trying to motivate manipulate God. They thought by fasting, even if it was the wrong reason, God would bless them. God said, oh, no, I won't either. Because you're not fasting with the right attitude and for the right reasons. So God says, I'm not going to bless you just because you're fasting. It had to be right on the inside first. Fasting is supposed to draw people closer to God. That's the real reason behind fasting, is to help you come closer, to draw closer to God. But their fasting that they were doing was actually taking them further away from God. And there's other accounts in some of the prophets about God's people and not fasting for the right reason, or the prophets telling them why they should fast. And it was all about bringing themselves closer to God, drawing closer to God. Fasting, as often as we read this in the New Testament, was an aid to prayer. You often see the disciples fasting and praying. Praying and fasting. They often went hand in hand. Because fasting help them focus on God. That was the reason. So fasting was like a way to assist or aid or help prayer. Because that fasting helped them focus on God. So no wonder God was concerned, Jesus was concerned about why his disciples would fast. He wanted them not to appear like they were fasting, but to appear like they weren't. Verse 18 says, so that you do not appear to men to be fasting. You know, God knows if you're fasting and if you're fasting for the right reason. You don't have to tell men, you don't have to wear a sign saying, I'm fasting. That's not how you're supposed to fast. We're not to draw attention to ourselves specifically, especially in religious acts. We're not supposed to do things to draw attention to ourselves. I think he makes that clear here. We're to make sure that our motivation comes from the inside, that we're doing things for the right reason. Whether it was doing good, the almsgiving, the charitable deeds, or whether it was fasting. Next week, Lord willing, we'll talk about prayer, the same type of thing. Those religious acts, those acts of service are only good, are only appropriate if they're done for the right reason. And so we have to make very sure that we're doing these things for the right reason. Whether it's praying, fasting, doing good, acts of service, any religious act, whatever, we must make sure we're doing them for the right reason. He says, if all we're looking for is man's reward, that's all we'll get. But if we do things for the right reason, notice what Jesus says. God will reward you. God will reward you. And of course, ultimately, that reward is in heaven. For his disciples, those citizens of the kingdom, those people who've experienced the new birth, John chapter 3, those are citizens of the kingdom. And it's those people who are supposed to be fasting or praying or almsgiving, doing charitable deeds. Those are the ones. And if we live that kind of life and do those things for the right reasons, Jesus says we will be rewarded. Not probably will be rewarded, but the Father will reward us. Of course, I think there's rewards in this life, but certainly the greatest reward is the next life. The invitation is yours. If you desire to experience that new birth and become a citizen of the kingdom, we encourage you to come tonight as David leads us in this invitation song. Let us stand.